This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. On this episode, we are joined by Lee Wilkie to discuss all the latest goings on at Dens and Tannadice. And Steve Finnan joins us to discuss his new book, We Had a Dream.
Hello, I'm Callum Woodger. Welcome to another episode of Twa Teams One Street. I am joined by an old has-been with a knackered knee, and Lee Wilkie is here as well. of course, I would never slander Lee like that, because Lee's about, 6'6", and I don't know, I'm not going to guess your weight because you batter me, but I'm not going to argue with you. I'm of course talking about Steve Finnan, who's also here with us. Steve, how are you doing, mate?
Thanks for having us on, Calm. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, of course, mate. It's always nice to have you on. Obviously, a DC Thomson colleague. Steve's on to promote his new book. We Had a Dream, I believe, is the title, Steve.
That's right.
Yep, Scotland Internationals in the Black and White Era. And just by chance, we've got a Scotland International with us as well, with Lee here. So that's worked out really well. But we'll get onto that a little bit later on in the show. First of all, we're going to talk about two City clubs, starting with Dundee. Of course, Lee, being the expert, having played for both clubs, even Telegraph columnist as well. It's great to have this expertise. Lee and I had a chat about 2 days ago for his column, and then we're doing it all again. So Lee will have the newspaper sitting there, I'm sure, ready to go, just to read out what he was saying before.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a page I hear turning there? Right?
Yeah, you can hear it. You can hear it.
of course, Dundee, great result last Saturday against Dunfermline. Terrible start, of course, going 2-0 down after 6 minutes. But a good comeback, Lee, and it shows a bit of character in the team to fight back in a really crucial game.
Yeah, it definitely does. It couldn't have got a worse start, really. I mean, what was it, 6 minutes or something like that, 2-0 down. But I think it says quite a lot about the group of players that they can battle back from that. And I think pretty much from that point, going down 2-0, they were probably the best team, really, for me. And I'm glad they got the result, because they really needed it, because they're going into a really sort of tough run of games coming up, and they want to be in the best position possible, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it was probably, you said it yourself, it was really bad defending, but you have to say two excellent finishes from Kevin O'Hara and Craig Whiting, particularly that wee dink to put Dunfermline ahead. Jason Cummins shows a bit of quality as well. Good falling into the box to get Dundee back in the game. And then you were impressed with Danny Mullen coming off the bench as well. He had a good impact on the game.
Yeah, I think when you're in that position where you're sort of chasing the game a little bit, I think he's a great player to bring on, because he's got so much energy, so much work rate, and you could just see he added to that, you know, added to the intensity that Dundee were obviously needing at that point in the game. And I think, yeah, take away the start, it was a pretty good performance from Dundee, really. You know, I like how Ashcroft has been obviously so aggressive in the opponent's box. They've defended generally quite well the past two games. Obviously, the first two goals against Dunfermline were really pretty poor, but you know, I think I'm going to give them cut them a little bit of slack there, just because it was one of those games where you just think it was just a terrible start, and these things happen, you know. So I think for the majority of the game, they defended pretty well.
Do you not think perhaps that Jason Cummings isn't getting the recognition that he's due? I think he's been an absolute breath of fresh air, standing out in that league.
I think, yeah, you're totally right. He obviously, when you first saw him in the first couple of games, I think he looked a little bit rusty. Mm. It wasn't quite happening for him in terms of link up and his first touch and stuff like that. But he's just got that striker's sort of brain where he's always on the front foot, always. And I think the goal against Dunfermline sort of summed it up exactly, the type of player he is. He was aware and ready for that ball to drop where it did. And I think you'll see a few more goals like that up until the end of the season from him. And he has been and he will be a massive player for Dundee.
He's 25. He's coming into his best years. I think he's a very, very good signing for Dundee.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. Got him tied down to a decent length contract as well. It was an impressive capture. 5 goals in in 9 games. You can't really argue with that, to be honest. It's not a bad record to kick off. Lee Ashcroft's running them close, though. Lee, he's a goal machine, 3 in his last 2. We were speaking earlier in the week as well. He must remind you of yourself as a young man now.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Ashcroft is... I don't know if most teams, if they've got the likes of Fontaine there as well, he's probably the number one target. Maybe not now, because Ashcroft scored 3 in the last 2 games, obviously. But I think when I was playing for Dundee and Dundee United, I was always the sort of focal point of the defenders, and, you know, the sort of forgot maybe about guys like John Daly and stuff like that. And I think that's almost what's happened with Ashcroft lately, is that they've sort of forgot about him, and he's so aggressive in the air, but he's maybe not like a massive 6 foot sort of 5 centre-half, but he's so aggressive and really attacks the ball. And I think you saw Dunfermline, they had to sort of change who was picking him up after, obviously, he caused him a few problems. So I think from now on, you'll probably see the best defender from most of the other teams sort of picking Ashcroft up from now on, because he's so good in the air.
Lee, when you were playing, did you have a favourite sort of corner to go and attack? Did you like a sort of a ball hung up rather than one fired in flat?
I think I would probably prefer just a ball drilled in so you could go and attack it. And really, when you get balls like that and they're coming straight at you, you don't need to do too much work to it. You just need to sort of allow it to hit off your head almost and direct it towards the goal.
Yeah.
But when it's hung up and you've got some other centre-half hanging off your shoulder and you're trying to generate a bit of power and that, it can be quite tough. And as I was saying earlier about when players used to pick me up, it almost got to the point where players wouldn't have watched the ball against me, they would just watch me.
Yeah.
And it would just be a case of stopping me from heading that ball. You know, it became really difficult, and I think Levine knew that, and then I ended up becoming the sort of guy who took these players away from the action, or myself, I did a little bit of blocking to try and get other players out the game and get boys like John Daly and Noel Hunt and that into the game. So I think it's difficult when you're sort of the number one focus.
A career in American football beckoned, but you never quite took a chance there. A big money spinner in the NFL as a a linebacker or whatever they call it.
The fridge.
Aye, the fridge, aye. Away from league business, it was a good result for Dundee. It gets them kind of back up into that mix for second spot. Raith Rovers hammered Dunfermline 5-1 last night, so they currently sit second, 3 points ahead of the Dark Blues. But the next focus for James O'Peg's team is St Johnston in the Scottish Cup third round on Saturday. That'll be a big test for them, Steve. St Johnston have had a great season.
St Johnston started rubbish. Remember, they lost 7 or 8 of their first 10, and then they had a stink in December.
Yeah.
But apart from that, they're having a cracking season, and they're on a good run of form, and I reckon
I'm glad you said that, because I thought you were going to like take away from my point there. They've had a great season, and then you went, oh, they had a stinking start.
Well, they did, but they're in the middle of a good run of form, so if Dundee can lay a good couple of blows on them in this game on Saturday, they'll be doing well, because that's a good side they'll be bringing down.
Absolutely. Dave McKay's came out and said, Lee, that he feels that they can progress into the next round and go on a bit of a run. It'll take a lot against a good St Johnston team, but it's a big test of where Dundee are at.
Yeah, I think it is going to be a huge test for them, because as Steve was saying, they've picked up a huge amount the past few months, and I think they're a really decent side now, well organised, tough to play against. But again, I've sort of mentioned this before about Dundee, I think they've got the squad of players, a lot of talent in there, and on their day can, I'm pretty sure, cause most Premiership teams problems. And I think, as you say, it might even be a wee indicator if they were to make the playoffs and they were to potentially play against a Premiership team, then it gives them an idea of where they should be and what sort of standard they should be at. But when you've got guys like sort of Charlie Adam and, you know, Cummins and all that, these types of boys, then, you know, you've got half a chance, I think, when you've got a good starting 11 like Dundee do have.
Absolutely. You mentioned Charlie, he's back in contention, back in full training. Jordan McGee's back in soon, and Alex Jakubiak as well. He's maybe a wee bit off, but it's a good chance for James McPake to experiment a wee bit, get guys game time. Don't know, trying to think, people spring to mind, Cammy Kerr maybe, Jonathan Afolabi.
Mm-hmm.
Just get boys minutes into their legs for what's going to be a really big end to the season for them.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. As you say, it depends how they look at this game. They're obviously wanting to go and do well. They don't want to go there and sort of suffer a heavy defeat or a poor performance or both, you know. So it's,
yeah,
I think it's a fine balance between throwing a couple of guys in who might need game time, but also going and giving a good account of ourselves. So I think having guys like Charlie and McGee back, it's massive really coming into these last few games, because two of the potentially best players at the club, really, you know. So it's probably a great time for McPate to have these boys coming back in, and it's one of those ones that that'll give the manager a headache, but it's the good headache when you've got a lot of talent to pick from and a lot of competition for places.
Absolutely. Steve, we know your allegiance as an Arab, but what have you made of Dundee's season so far?
They've underperformed, I have to say. They've got a very good starting 11, and I don't know, sometimes they've just not clicked. I tell you what, though, if Saturday's a cup tie, then Tuesday next, that's Dundee's cup final. I think this is going to be air away next Tuesday. I think this is Dundee's defining game of the season.
Yeah.
If they win that and they go, they're on a roll. But if they lose that, they're right back in the mire. So whatever they do, whatever happens on Saturday, Tuesday's the game they should be concentrating on.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, but there are no easy games, particularly in a division like the Championship. But you're right, they've got that game in hand on Raith Rovers above them. It can help them pull away from Inverness, from Dunfermline, who, albeit the Pars do have their own game in hand. They've got Morton at home next Saturday. The games are coming thick and fast. They've only got, what is it now, 6 games until the season ends. Lee, it's about kicking on now and trying to get that second spot from, you know, a Raith side that they look like they're in top form at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting one with Raith, because I watched the game and I've watched them previously, and I think they're probably the type of team that, similar to Dundee on their day, could give anybody a real game, but they lack a little bit of the consistency and stuff like that. But they play some really nice football out from the back, and again, you can see how they can go and create sort of 5 goals like they did last night against Dunfermline, but you could also see how they could get caught out a little bit, and if teams maybe press them properly high up the pitch, where they'll struggle a little bit. So I think they'll lack consistency as well, similar to Dundee over the next wee while. So, but as you said before, every game's a real difficult game for Dundee going from this point onwards. I mean, they've got, what, 6 games left, and I was looking at the fixtures, and it's 4 away games, which are basically Dunfermline, Inverness, Queen of South, Ayr, which are all really tough games for them, you know. So it starts on Tuesday against Ayr. They can hopefully sort of avenge the result from, you know, the other week. And I think it's proven already this year that if they went and won 2 or 3 games on the bounce, that could potentially just cement their place in the playoffs, you know, because everybody apart from Hearts basically has lacked real consistency this year. So it's at this point where it really matters for Dundee, and just getting the feeling from watching them against Alloa, the fight back against Dunfermline, they might just actually have the bit between their teeth a little bit just now, which is good for them.
Yeah, it almost feels like Hearts have sort of got away with murder a wee bit this season, actually. They've not been that good, but they're still so far ahead at the top of the table. It's unbelievable.
I reckon the ones to watch, the ones to be frightened of, are Inverness. I think they're putting together a run. They just seem to have clicked. They're that sort of team that you'd always be worried if you're going in to play them. There's never a given against them. And I think they're the ones, I think they're Dundee's main challengers for certainly third spot. Raith Rovers, Dundee will have to get above Raith Rovers, I think. You want to be second. You want to be playing just the game less and have the home advantage. You're wanting to do that. So that's what they've got to aim for.
It's crucial for them now at this stage of the season to really push on. You mentioned Inverness there being a close rival. They've signed Scott Allen from Hibs on loan, really top player. Dundee were actually in for him, Lee. Is that a big miss for James McPake and his squad, or do you think they're kind of sufficiently covered in that area?
I think they probably have got covered, but then I think he's such a good player that you would take him. You know, that's the way it sort of boils down.
Yeah.
Is that I think he's an excellent player, and to have a player like that in your squad would be great. I think, again, it would give McPake a headache as to where to play him and who to play him with and get that balance right in midfield. But then you can't really knock back guys like Scott Allen if you're going to get get the advantage out of having them in for a few games. I think the only real question mark that's probably been, well, with a player like Scott, it's just his fitness and how much he's going to be able to come into a team and affect the game the way he would want to, because obviously he's not going to be 100% fit just now. So is it a case of him coming to get match sharpness, or is he really going to play week in, week out for Inverness and be fit enough to do that?
Yeah, it's good to see a kid, though. I say a kid, he's older than me, and he's not a kid anymore, but he's a kid to you, Lee. I'm sure he's someone that came through at United just around the time you were there. And it's good to see him back on the pitch after some health problems as well with his heart condition and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I played with him at Dundee United, and he was a good lad and a good player. And, you know, you feel for players whenever they've had any sort of setback in their career. And it's good that he's, I think I'd watched a couple of interviews with him, and he just seems to be relieved to sort of know what's wrong and to sort of kick on with things now that he's got an idea of what the issue was. It must have been quite a sort of scary time for him just to not really know what was wrong with him, you know. And he's obviously really keen to prove he's still a good player at that level for Hibs. So, you know, I think he's got a bit of a point to prove going to Inverness.
Absolutely. Neil McCann's a good manager for him as well, because McCann likes to play football on the ground, possession football, and the way Scott Allan plays, I guess that's gonna suit him, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, Scott's obviously, I'm sure he'll come away with a huge amount of assists. He's a bit like Charlie for Dundee, is that he sees passes and sees balls through to strikers, and I'm pretty sure you'll see him either score or create quite a lot for Inverness.
Do you not think maybe Graham Dorans didn't really work with Charlie Adams, so there's every chance that Scott Allan might not have worked very well with him either?
Totally agree with that. That's what I'd mentioned about the balance, is that I think, exactly as you said about Dorans, I was expecting a lot more from him. And when you think to yourself, you've got somebody like Dorans and Adam in the midfield, it's going to just automatically happen. But I think you've seen that with Charlie and the Dundee team, is that you've got to have the right players around them. You've got to have the right balance in midfield. And if it's not quite there, it just doesn't quite happen. So, yeah, potentially it would have been tough for Scott Allan to sort of, or McPake, sorry, to fit Scott Allan into that team. But then I think, you know, he's a quality player, and I think just to have him in your squad would have been a huge boost. But yeah, again, tough to sort of try and get that balance in midfield. But then when you've got guys like McGee coming back, I think these guys like that, Byrne and McGee, they do that sort of dirty work sometimes. So it's what makes managing football clubs so difficult, I think.
Yeah, I don't want this to be a slight on Scott Allan, but he's sort of like a luxury player, and with Charlie, he's at an age where he's not going to do a lot of running. Scott Allan typically maybe doesn't do a lot of running. You've got a guy there right now, a kid, only 19, Max Anderson, who's playing out his skin as a box to box kind of midfielder. It would feel unfair as well. There's no reason to drop a kid doing that well. He's looking like a really impressive find for Dundee.
No, yeah, he is, and I totally agree with you. I really like Max as a player, and if it was a sort of toss up between Max playing every week and Scott Allan coming in and maybe potentially taking a bit of game time off him, I would always take Max to be in that team. Really, you know, I think it's really important for Dundee to promote their sort of younger players and to give them opportunities, and I think you can see that with the opportunity that Max has had lately. He's really sort of taken it and kicked on a little bit.
What helps him greatly is that he's a good athlete, and last season Callum Butcher was the best player in that league, and it's because Callum Butcher is a very powerful man, and although the young lad is obviously not quite at that standard yet, but he gets up and down the park, and he's got legs. He's exactly the type of player you need in that division.
100%. Yeah, I think you could say that about McGee as well. When he goes into the midfield, I was really impressed with him when he went in there, because he gives just energy and determination and the right attitude. And as you say, similar to Butcher in there, he doesn't give players a second.
There you go. That was quite a coherent and interesting opening part of the show. We're going to have to get Bear and George off more often on holiday. Get you boys in. We've got to keep it up. Keep going on to the next part where we speak about Dundee United. Yes, Dundee United have their own cup action this weekend. They welcome Partick Thistle to Tannadice in the third round. We're going to talk about that in a little bit. But first of all, we're going to speak about a story which broke this morning. Dundee United owner Mark Ogren is behind plans for a new golf resort in St Andrews. His company, an investment consulting company, GPH Engineering, have bought a site just outside of the Fife town and are looking to build a multi-million pound golf course. Steve, in a way, good to see that the United owners are investing in the local area and seem settled and happy in Dundee. In other ways, you can have questions about why is the money not getting ploughed into United, I suppose. How do you see it?
Well, if you were a multimillionaire, would you plough more money into a Scottish football club? Because the one...
He's done plenty so far.
The boy has done fantastic. He's been a good owner for Dundee United. I keep looking for little sort of shadows of danger or something, because you wonder about these guys who come in, they don't have tangerine blood, but they come in, they think they can make money out of it. But I honestly think that Mark Ogren has kind of got a wee bit infected with the crowd and the passion that comes with Scottish football, and I think he's really enjoying that. So I'm not at all frightened that he's on the verge of pulling out. So you can only regard this as a good thing. Maybe he'll move his entire operation over to Scotland, because he seems to be getting really into it. And so,
yeah,
no, fair play to him. The one thing I would say is that golf courses and golf clubs are closing throughout Scotland, but maybe St Andrews will buck the trend and that's the place to come to. But good luck to him, really.
Yeah. No, it's the home of golf after all. United's obviously train at the University Sports Centre there, so it's all based locally for him. He must have been out this morning at Downfield watching you and Dillo and Willow and Tony Dockley swinging the clubs about.
Well, if he did, then he's probably put him right off opening a golf course or something if he saw me swinging a golf club. But I think it's really positive for Dundee United. It shows that he's obviously got a commitment to this area and I think it can only be a good thing, really.
Yeah, okay, moving on to the football, enough golf, because I'm swimming way out of my depth here. I'm drowning a little bit. Thistle come to Tannadice on Saturday, obviously. Not the club they once were, Steve, League One team, but United do have to be on their guard and make sure they do a professional job to get into the next round.
They do. Parrick are third or fourth down in Division 1, and I'm expecting United to go out there and put in a very professional performance, play to their strengths, obviously play their first 11 and win. In fact, I'll go further than that. I'm looking for a couple of goals out of this, just to set myself up to trip up and fall on my butt.
It's an opportunity, though, for guys like Shankland to get a bit of confidence and get firing.
Yes, absolutely. That's what we should be going out and doing. You've got to go out with confidence. And I think Mickey will send them out as winners, not as somebody who's just want to go and try hard. The old mantra is when a wee team comes up against a big team is that you match them for effort and then class will tell. You would hope that would happen, but no, I'm taking for granted. But I'm expecting a win out of that.
Is that an assessment you'd go along with, Lee?
Yeah, I think he's totally right. Usually I just can't see Mellon letting the players take their foot off the gas in a game like that. You know, I think any Premiership team that plays against teams from the lower league, if you don't go about the game properly and you don't match them, then you're going to cause yourself problems. And I think Dundee United have been in a sort of good place the past few while. They're playing quite good football. They've got a chance to get a little run in the cup. Then, you know, there's everything there for them to go out and perform. And as Steve says, I hope they go out and they get a win, but they get a comfortable win as well.
Yeah, it'll be a bit of fresh legs for United as well. They've had a week off. Partick are obviously only just back into their season, getting underway again after the suspension of the lower league. So there might be a bit of a kind of fitness gap there. It'll be interesting to see. Of course, a cup run as well. It could be, you know, transformative for the Tangerines, Lee. I mean, we've seen it in your time at the club. Made the 2008 League Cup final, obviously, unfortunately, weren't able to win that day. Won the Cup in 2010, and then the club went on to achieve things that the current, you know, board and management team are targeting right now. Top six, European football, silverware. It can change the whole atmosphere at a club, can't it, going on a wee run?
Yeah, it can give a club huge confidence, and it can give all these sort of young players coming through huge experience as well and motivation to go on and kick on and better themselves as well, you know. So it's just in general, it creates a good atmosphere around the club. It's just pity the fans can't be sort of there to get involved as well, because there's nothing better than a sort of good cup run for fans to get excited about.
Absolutely. I'm sure you echo those sentiments, Steve. I'm sure Ian McCall doesn't, because I don't think he'd be very warmly welcomed at Tannadice.
you've got to give him respect. Ian McCall's a good manager. Whatever you say about him, he sometimes says things, I think, a little bit provocative perhaps, but he knows how to set up a football team.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting clash between Mickey Mellon and Ian McCall on Saturday. I think Mellon's described it as they're going to be going at it hammer and tongs. So we will see. We will see how that one pans out. Good news in a way for Dundee United is they'll have Jean Dufoux available. Unfortunately, he was left out of the Cameroon squad for the African Cup of Nations qualifiers, but he's been impressive in his first season for United, Steve.
I really like that boy. I think he gets around the park fantastically well. The one thing I don't think he's shown so far is much in the attacking sense, but I know we're going to go on and talk about Mickey's book, but I'm wondering if that's the sort of player that Mickey is profiling to put in his team in seasons to come. That it's all action. He doesn't seem to have any fear. He gets wild and about. He appears to have good positional sense, although he's still young as well. But I would say that he's an indicator of what we might see in seasons to come from Dundee United.
Absolutely, absolutely. He's got big ambitions to make it in the game. Another player with very lofty ambitions, Lee, Jamie Robson, speaking to your pal Sean Dillon on DUTV this week, saying that he's still targeting making the Premier League. Of course, we know Jamie had interest from Southampton a number of years ago. Do you think it's good to see that ambition in a guy who, I think he's 23 now, maybe thought he might have missed the boat in getting that big move? He's still working away to try and step up a few levels.
Yeah, definitely. I think most young players have got to have that sort of ambition, whether it's a 17, 18-year-old at Dundee United or Dundee wanting to go and kick on and make first team, or whether it's somebody like Jamie who then wants to go and kick on to another level. I think it's always good to see kids that have got a bit of confidence, even a little bit of arrogance as well, about how good the player they are and what they can do in the game. So I think you'll need to definitely improve and keep improving over the next couple of years for that to happen, but why not?
Yeah. I watched his interview with your man Dillo. He's getting quite confident on the old doing these big interviews as Sean, big charismatic Irishman, so he is. But he seems to be, I spoke to him about about his DUTV gig, and he seems to be enjoying it. He's a natural. Anything you fancy doing yourself other than the line, Lee? Nah, bit of media work beyond your column, of course.
No, not quite. I mean, I'll leave it up to Sean, but I was speaking to him today. He really loves it. He does. He really loves it, and he puts a lot of effort into it and does a lot of research on the players. And I think he would definitely look to take that further if he had the opportunity, which is fair play to him. So I actually spoke about stuff today about him branching out and maybe doing his own thing, whether it be podcasts or whether it be sort of interviews for footballers or whatever. So I think it's great to see. Great to see him have a sort of another swing to his bow.
He's coming for me, Steve. I've got a target on my back in the media here. But you're enjoying it as a fan.
I am, definitely. I think Sean's got a sense of humour that he injects into stuff. He doesn't mind going off on a wee tangent when he's doing the commentating. And too often, I've watched a lot of these games coming streaming online, and the commentators are sometimes, you have to admit, a little bit wooden, but Sean comes on with his Irish accent. He's not afraid to crack a joke, not afraid to put a wee bit of personality into it, and I'm really liking it. And I think possibly the more confidence he gets, the more sort of we'll be Saint and Greavesy with Sean and Callum or somebody else coming up.
Oh, I don't know about that. Ali Herder's got that gig nailed down. I think he's they've formed quite a good wee partnership, a wee duo there. So yeah. I'll stay well out of it. Hang on to what I'm doing here because I'm starting to feel very threatened by all the up and comers, young up and comers like 37-year-old Sean Dillon. So another player we spoke about, John DeFuchs, there just a moment ago. Another player from away from these shores who's settling in well. To life at United right now is Adrian Sporla. Steve, another guy who's had a really good season in Tangerine. He's maybe could be feeling a bit unlucky not to have played more, actually, the form he's shown.
He's got that quality about him that you absolutely love to see. He's unpredictable. You never know what he's going to do, which foot he's going to kick it with. He's just got that certain something. He's not, in my opinion, a fullback, but as a sort of roving left-hand-sided player, I'm enjoying watching him play. And I think that United, with him in it and playing well, it raises him 10%. He appears to... He's got skill, he's got drive, he wants to score, seems enthusiastic. I really like the boy. I think he's got... Can only kick on from here. And he's not obviously been brought over here for nothing. He's got something about him, and he's good. Get him in the team every week, I would say.
Yeah, I was lucky to speak to Adrian just last week there. I say speak, we had a sort of a Spanglish conversation, not about the movie starring Adam Sandler, but he did a wee bit of Spanish, I did a wee bit of Spanish, he did a wee bit of English. I tried to do a wee bit of English as well. We got there. But I think you're right, Steve, he's definitely not a left-back. I don't think he sees himself as a left-back. He's definitely more of an attacking sort of left midfielder type player. I think he's even angling to be getting starts up front, and you can't argue with it. He's got four goals, so I think that makes him United's third top scorer this season. It's an area of the park they've maybe not excelled in too much this season, but to be fair to them, they have got the job done. He's actually Dundee United's second highest Argentine scorer of all time. We mentioned this last week. Number one's Damian Castellanova. Did you play with him?
Yeah, I did. I played with him. Actually, I tackled him in training, and that was... I finished my career tackling him.
Oh, really?
I don't think you would know that. It was just a random sort of sliding tackle and chain, and I caught my leg underneath my body. And,
oh, no.
That was me done. Game over. So it was actually against Damon. He'll not remember the tackle, like, but I do, because it was a sore one.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had any stories about Damien, but that one's pretty bleak. So I think we'll I think we'll quickly move on from that. We've already had too many jokes about dodgy knees on this podcast so far. So a young player you'll know quite a bit about, Lee, Nathan Cooney at United, young centre back. He's gone to Raith Rovers on loan until the end of the season, as we were mentioning in the Dundee section. They're flying high in the Championship. That's a good move for him. He's not had the best of luck with his loan moves, obviously. He was meant to be at Kelby Hearts, but their season got sort of curtailed, and he's been sitting in the academy and the reserves, not playing much football, but there's a talented boy in there.
Yeah, he's a really talented player. I coached Nathan for a wee while when I was in with the academy, and you know, I think these sort of moves, loan moves for players, can really make or break them. And I think it's a really important time in his career where I think he needs to kick on and show that he's good enough for first-team football. And I just hope he goes to Raith and he gets the game time he deserves, and he shows what good a player he is. And, you know, I think there's loads of players that are in that sort of situation just now in Scottish football, never mind Dundee United. So it's a really big sort of one or two months coming up for him, and I hope he grabs it with both hands.
Yeah, plenty of impressive youngsters at United at the moment. Lewis Nielsen and Kai Fotheringham are obviously doing well at Falkirk. Mickey Mellon says he's out watching these guys regularly. There's investment being made as well. They've done the United Youth Development Board, ploughed something like £140,000 into the club in recent times. Steve, it shows you that there's a pathway there for young talent to get into the team. You must, as a fan, enjoy seeing local boys getting the chance.
Absolutely. I was born and raised on United, raising their own players, and the Dundee United Youth Development Board deserves an awful lot more credit than it's getting for the amount of money it's putting in. In fact, since probably the last 5 years, that's possibly the single best thing that's happened to Dundee United, the development board, the effort put into recruit guys like Andy Goldie and having Brian keeping an eye on the, he was the manager of the loanees, as it were. And
Brian Grant,
yeah. And they're loaning guys out. They did fantastic, I thought, to sign up the young laddie Smith that was, he was way down to Manchester United and Aston Villa. Mm-hmm. But he signed for United. And I think that says a lot about what they're doing. And some of the boys coming through, Lewis Nielsen looks a player. Several of them look like players. And I'm really quite optimistic about this. I think this is the Dundee United that I recognise. The Dundee United I want to see. And to be honest, I'd prefer to blood them even quicker. The boy Chris Mochrie up at Montrose, I've only seen one 90 minutes that he's played, but the boy looks like a player. He can pick out a pass. If a pass isn't on, he'll spin and he'll come back and he'll find someone else. And looking at that, I'm thinking, yeah, you're a player I want on my team. So the future's bright, I think, for United, and it's imperative that they do this, that they put money into it. So fair play to the Youth Development Board. My hat off to you guys. You're doing good stuff.
Yeah, Chris Mochrie is one that Dillo, who obviously player coach at Montrose Lee, he raves about him whenever I speak to him.
Yeah, I mean, it's huge for Dundee United, as Steve says, because come next season, come pre-season, and all these sort of guys like Mochrie and Nielsen and Fullenham and Cooney, fingers crossed, have all came back far better players because they've been out on loan. It's almost like half a dozen new signings, you know, of players that have got real quality that have came through the academy, and it's a huge boost for the club. And again, that sort of age group, which, well, I call them the 2003s because that was what the age group they were for me coaching them.
Yeah.
It makes me feel old when I say 2003s, like, but it's that group are just excellent. Like, you know, they've got probably six or seven that have got a real chance of pushing on for the first team next year. And credit to all the money that goes in to sort of fund that, because Brian Grant obviously did a huge amount before when I was in there coaching. He did it all himself pretty much, you know, and it was on a real limited budget. Now they've came in, and fair play to the chairman and all the money that is going in externally. They're wanting to do things properly. They've got full-time coaches in there. They've got huge sort of resources available to them. And hopefully Dundee United start to see the benefit of that and sort of... I think it's unfair to sort of say this group of players coming through right now are reaping the benefit of this new sort of academy, because it's too early to tell. I think the real sort of indication and reflection of the investment will be maybe 3, 4, 5 years down the line, when you see all these young kids coming through the ranks.
Just remarkable, Lee, that none of them had seen you pick up a Scotland cap, given they were born in 2003. mental. They missed out. But are you taking a lot of credit for the development of some of these guys? And I mean, all the defenders, Lewis, Kerr, Nathan, we're going to get loads of mini Lee Wilkies running about the pitch, eh?
No, well, I mean, I'll take about 95% of the credit. I can't take all the credit. Some of that was Grant, like, you know, but no, I mean, I'll be totally honest with you. Guys like Lewis Nielsen, he wasn't even a centre-half when I coached him. He played centre midfield.
Yeah.
So it shows how good a coach I was. I was playing him out of position for about 3 years. So.
anyway, Dundee United's first team boss, Mickey Mellon, he's got a book out. Steve, you'll appreciate that. Another author in our ranks.
Yeah, guys, this is really interesting. Have you read any of it?
I got it yesterday, and I've read the first kind of chapter or two. It is interesting. It's called The First 100 Days, Lessons in Leadership from the Football Bosses, and I'm sure Steve's going to go on and tell us a bit about it.
I really dislike these books. You know, like the sort of management mantra type of books, like Tame the Inner Chimp and all that stuff.
Yeah.
None of that has ever resonated at all with me. You read it and you think, it's all these boys coming away with management speak, blue sky thinking, deep dive nonsense. But this book, he talks about leadership, and he's written it, co-written it with a guy who's a head teacher of a school. But whenever he gives examples of what he's talking about, he references what people like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer or Sam Allardyce or Mark Palios at the FA. He mentions what they're doing and how they've gone about it. And I've actually really got into this, and I love the way he talks about setting up the ethos within a club. Like, he talks about Sean Dyche, who was not favourite for the job at Burnley, but when once he went and got interviewed, and the fans didn't really want him, the fans wanted somebody else. But Sean Dyche says, well, I'll tell you what, I can't promise that we'll win every game, but I can promise you sweat on the shirts. And that really resonated with the people of Burnley and the ethos of that town. And you can see what Mickey's tried to do when once he's come into Tannadice. He's really bought into the history of the club, the ethos of the club, what we find interesting. He gives an example of Carlo Ancelotti when he signs for, when he goes into Everton. He does an entire deep dive. Oh, God, I've just said it as well.
I was going to say, you've just got to get your own rule there.
he really researches the history of Everton so that when he's speaking to the supporters, they're all talking, they're all speaking from the same hymn sheet, like they're all on the same way. And Mickey, he does things like examines what people have done in the past. For instance, Alex Ferguson used to say, we're always stronger in the second half of the season. And in all the honesty, it was nonsense. Ferguson admitted himself, he never did anything different in the second half of the season than he did in the first. But he created this aura around his team, they're all stronger in the second half of the season. And it got to the point where the punters believed it, commentators believed it, and they would actually say to each other, oh yeah, Manchester United are always stronger. But the players believed it as well. And Mickey's doing a sort of psych job on all of us. It's how he gets us and the players and the club in the palm of his hand. And if he put a presentation like that to Tannadice when he got the interview for the job, that's why he's got the job, because this sounds really, really persuasive. And you can see what he's trying to do, how he's trying to do it. He's got a vision of what he wants to do, where we're headed, why we're going there, how we're going to get there. I wish there was a wee bit more about Dundee United in it, but it is fascinating, guys. I would encourage anybody to read it, because you can watch it happening in real time, and it's great. I'm a big fan of this.
I was going to expand on it or ask Lee to expand on it, but Steve's obviously been hypnotised by Mickey Mellon. He's just gone out and given a full book review there. But no, you're right. I think that obviously there could have been a bit more United in there, but to be fair to him, I think it was all written just before he joined the club. And there is a little bit in the sort of reflections at the end of the book and about him taking on the role at United. It would have been interesting to see Mickey's own thought process behind his first 100 days at Tannadice, but you're right, it's got a bit of everything in there. I think it's designed sort of in a way as a handbook for managers, but also for supporters to get kind of in the minds of these kind of bosses like Solskjaer, like David Moyes, Allardyce. It's also just a good read, I think, just an interesting read, well written, and it's the way it's formatted and split up into all different sections, it's an easy read, it's digestible. Well done to Mickey and Phil Denton, the head teacher that Steve mentions there, from the Wirral down at Tranmere. Good luck to them with that, and we're going to move on now, and Steve's going to tell us a little bit more about his own book. Yes, DC Thompson's own Steve Finnan, author of many fantastic books like Arabs Away, Lifted Over the Turnstiles. He has another treat for us. It's called We Had a Dream, Scotland Internationals in the Black and White Era. And he's here to tell us a wee bit more about it. Steve, take it away.
Thank you very much, Colm. It is nothing other than a look back with thistle-tinted glasses on, if that's not too much of a mixed metaphor. The DC Thompson Archive, for anybody who doesn't know, is a vast cave full of wonders. And we used to send photographers to every game, every press conference, everything that was happening in Scottish football. And it is stuffed full of photographs. A lot of them were never even developed from negatives. So I've gone through all of them and come up with what I reckon is the best 360 pages of Scottish international football history that you'll ever see. It only goes up to the end of 1978. That's because at some point next year, I'm sorry, there's going to be a volume two. I just couldn't squeeze everything in.
That's all right then.
But some of the stuff I've got and some of the characters you come across and you feel you've got to explain how they were good, why they were so good. But you've got people like Billy Bremner, and I don't know if you know, on the plinth of Billy Bremner's statue outside Elland Road, they've got a favourite saying of Billy Bremner, and it says, team before self every time. And that's the way they see their team, their entire club, and it's all based on the way Billy Bremner was. And I've got some fantastic pictures of Bremner, who was seemingly quite a difficult man for anybody to live with, but on the pitch, what a winner that guy is. And Peter Lorimer taking shots from everywhere, and Big Joe Jordan getting up like an absolute, like Lee Wilkie in his prime, and powering in headers. But all these pictures I've found, I've put them all in the book, and context, and it is a nostalgia fest. Unashamedly, it's about nostalgia. It's the type of thing that an old football bloke, you will lose yourself in. And I've honestly, utterly, utterly enjoyed putting it together, finding out, you know, you find a picture of Scotland in that strange pink and yellow hooped shirt. And I made it my business to go and find out, why did they wear pink and yellow hooped shirts? And it's
so does this go right back to like the 1870s, then 1880s when it sort of started? Or
most of the pictures are from the war onwards, because right, that's when it really gets interesting. World Cup star, and you've got those characters that, you know, everybody recognises. Billy Steele, Big George Young, for instance. We should make more heroes like this. The only time it goes before the war is to, I've got an entire chapter on Hughie Gallagher. Now, Hughie Gallagher is possibly the greatest centre-forward that football has ever seen. But because he played 100 years ago, nobody remembers.
Football's never
this.
Seen.
Yeah. No, exactly, yeah. And there's not enough footage of him. But the more and more research I did, and the more and more you read about the match reports in which Gallagher played, it's almost like reading about Maradona. That's what he's like. He gets the ball, he beats four and five people, he shoots, he scores. And his scoring record is incredible. He's still the third top scorer behind Dalglishan Law. And his story is an absolute tragic thing. He goes from a troubled Scottish footballer. That's hardly a new story, that. But he goes through his life. He's an absolute hero. He drinks too much. He fights too much. And he's got centre-halves trying to, no offence, Lee, but big centre-halves trying to take him off at the knees. And he gets his retaliation in first most of the time. And he's just such a character. But the end of his life is tragic. He ends up, he throws himself in front of a train. And it's just, it's horrible. But again, I found pictures of Hughie Gallagher that nobody's seen since the war. And I've got them in this book. And it's a bit of a jewel in the crown. And best of all, I got Dennis Law, the king himself, to write a foreword for it. And Dennis talks about, he remembers all those days and remembers what it was like to play for Scotland in those days. And he's very entertaining with it, and an absolute gem of a man. I mean, he's 80 now, but he's brilliant, really. A great guy. And if anybody likes the book or likes Scotland games, fair enough, but I don't really mind, because I had so much fun putting it together that I've had my joy out of it. So it's £19.99. It's in shops from May the 1st. It's 360-page hardback. It's the best Father's Day gift you could ever give for your old man. Tell you that.
Yeah, go, well timed. You've given it all away, to be honest. I don't know if I'm going to buy it now. I'm just going to listen back to the podcast.
You've not seen the pictures.
That's true. That's what it's all about. It's all about the pictures. Having been in the archive at the Kingsway myself, it is an absolute treasure trove, you have to say, full of things that have just lain dormant for years. So, Steve, you always do a good job in sort of dredging up the best of what we've got in there and putting it together in a nice way. So, I'm sure that'll sell well. You're working on a second version of Lifted Over the Turnstiles as well, which is a sort of look at Scottish football grounds over the years. The first edition of that did really well.
I'm going to blow my own trumpet here a wee bit, but over the past 3 years, that's been the best-selling Scottish football book, I have to say. Just a wee touch in there for you. However, I've got so many pictures that I'm going to have to put out a two-volume follow-up to, and I'm going to call it Lifted Over the Turnstiles, Football Grounds and Crowds, because this time it's going to be full of pictures of Scottish football grounds packed full of spectators and all the wee things, all the little foibles of the grounds. And I've got absolutely some fantastic pictures. And the best thing about it is people have read Lifted Over Turnstiles, the first one, and I put a wee note in it saying, do you have any pictures like this? Get in touch. And a lot of people have come forward to me and said, you know what, I've got a cracking picture of Cathkin Park. Or just last month, just in February there, this guy gets in touch with me and says, I've got fantastic pictures of dens that I bet you've never seen. And I says, well, right, okay, let's see them then. And he sent me them over, and absolutely superb. This is the sort of thing Dundee supporters will love. I mean, dens, it's maybe past its best as a ground, but when it was full back in the day, lovely stuff, great stuff.
Mm-hmm. And yeah,
but there's all sorts of other. I'm going to do a chapter on floodlights, on tunnels, on dugouts, on the outside of the ground, on pitch invasions, all sorts of stuff. The amount of pictures, honestly, I've got, it's going to be 720 pages, chock full of pictures. You wait and you see this, honest. If the first book was good, this one's going to be better. And that's not something I'm saying lightly. Like, is that enough? Is that enough of me boasting now?
That is perfect, mate. No, it sounds like if you're a football geek like me, floodlights and turnstiles, pictures of floodlights and turnstiles sounds ideal. but I suppose it's not just your current ground as well. You look back at, there's so many grounds, you know, in our area, Muirton, St Johnston, for example, Lough Street, Cathkin Park, you know, Clyde Banks, old ground, you know, Brockville, places like that that have been lost to time, but this will sort of drag up memories for people as well.
Even the current grounds, they're nothing like the way they were in the past. Grounds had to change after the Taylor Report came out. I know that, but there's a whole generation, and Callum, you're one of these people. You've never experienced what it's like to be at Hampden with 120,000 people when you kind of, sometimes your feet don't touch the ground and you get back and forwards in the sways, you can smell the people around about you. It's when someone happens on the pitch, it's like everybody surges forward, and that doesn't happen anywhere in any sport anymore. I mean, you get people crowded in close at concerts and such like, but at concerts, everybody's happy. At a football ground, when someone really infuriated you and everybody around about you went absolutely ape, and it's just... I didn't really appreciate it at the time, but it's something you'll never see again, something you'll never get to again. And it was exciting. It filled up all of your senses. You could feel, you were actually tired when you came out of a big game like that. I've got a thing in the Scotland book about when Kenny Dalglish nutmegs Clements. I was on the North Terrace at Hampden that day, and I was with my father, and somebody stood on my face and loosened my tooth. But I couldn't find my father to say to him, look, I'm in bother here. I was only like 13 year old, but the place erupted, and there's nothing like that anymore. When Celtic and Rangers, whichever one of them scored the goal, there was an average of 20 people got broken limbs or fractured ribs or something, because the place just went so mental. Nowadays, the young kids call it scenes. You kind of have scenes like we used to have, because you've got seats in the way. When they say a stand erupts when they score a goal, it does, but it's nothing like what it used to be in the past. And that's what I've tried to capture,
Steve, actually,
for the new book.
I actually believe it's called Limbs, not Scenes. I believe it's Limbs.
Is it?
Limbs. I'm sure it's Limbs.
They can invent the terminology, but they've no idea what they're talking about.
It sort of ruined my setup there. The fact that the book currently only goes up to 1978, because I teed it up for Lee to talk about his kind of his era of playing for Scotland, but neither Lee or I were even born in 1978. So
you're just burned.
But of course, I'm sure your next edition will include Lee, sort of early 2000s era.
The next book's going to have Lee on the cover. Lee's going to be the cover star.
Brilliant. of course, the current Scotland crop are still in action, World Cup qualifying action. We're recording here on a Wednesday, so it's tonight they play the Faroe Islands after draws against Austria and Israel. Lee must win. It's the Faroe Islands, it's at home. But we know, and I'm sure you definitely know, it's not always as simple as that against the Faroes.
No, definitely not. I mean, I don't think the FUD probably great form going into this game, Scotland, but neither have Faroes really, you know. So it's,
yeah.
I think it's really, really big, important game for them. Obviously, if they score earlier, the better, then great. But obviously, if the last time, in my experience against the Faroes, when we went to the Faroes to play them, they got the early goal, and that just totally changed things and makes it a totally different game. So fingers crossed and go out there from the get-go and get an early goal, because I think the sort of first half against Israel, they were a little bit lacklustre, so I'm sure the manager will be on to the players just to make sure they start and they're at it 100% from the first whistle.
Right, wait a minute. Lee, were you playing in that game where we went 2 down?
No, I was on the bench, so I wasn't really...
Ducking responsibility here.
Completely ducking responsibility, yeah.
I was about to give you pelters for that, even though 18 years
That was actually the game that sort of propelled me into getting a start, because David Weir was involved in that game and Betty Vokes lost the plot, I think, at half-time or end of the game. And David Weir decided he wasn't going to come back again and play international football. So it opened up a little space for me to come in and play after that. So it wasn't a great day for that.
Well, obviously not, Lee. You think it was a great game. I got you a place in the team. 2-0 yeah, draw with the Faroes. Get in.
Well, I mean, from a personal point of view, it worked out probably better. But at the time, I didn't know that. So it was. I'd said to Callum the other day when we turned up there. You know, you've got Faroes. You've got all the houses. I've got little small houses with like grass on the roofs, and we turned up. You know, and we're walking around the pitch, having a look at the pitch, and then sort of the Faroes team turned up and all had these sort of fisherman cream wheelie jumpers on, and I'm thinking, oh wait a minute here, this is, you know. And I don't know if that was maybe a ploy from them just to sort of get into our heads before the game, but it worked.
we'll have this lot of neighbour, boom, 2-0 down.
Yeah, exactly.
I tell you what though, just to sort of put in the commentator's hex on this. The Faroese at the moment have got that one boy, Edmundson, who is a bra player. He plays in Germany, and that boy's a player. So, obviously, when he puts in his hat trick tonight, I'll get blamed for tipping him. But
we'll get him down as first goal scorer.
Aye. It'll be like John Peterson, Mark too. It's a name that still gives Lee Wilkie shivers as he goes to bed at night.
No! You're wrong. Lee loved that guy.
But yeah, no, good luck to Scotland. Hopefully, they don't need our luck. Hopefully, the English Premier League talent we have should go and beat them. But who knows?
Callum, I think we should maybe each predict the score.
Right, I didn't want to do that, but you said it.
No, let's do it. Go on.
Right, you start us off then, Steve. On you go.
Right, 4-0 Scotland.
Confident. Lee?
I mean, I thought I was being quite ambitious. I was going to say 3-0, but obviously, so I'm being a bit boring.
I'm being even more conservative in saying 2-1 to Scotland. I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be decent.
I really Colin, do. What are you like? You're a big girl. Get in there. 6-0.
Remember the 6-0? I remember that from a few years ago, wasn't it? I don't think we've played them since then, actually. But no, I think it could be quite tight. We've had a lot of games recently, and they gave Austria a wee fright. They only beat them 3-1. So, who knows? We'll see. I'm not the most confident, I have to say, at the moment. But look, it's all about the Euros, isn't it? It's all about the Euros for us. It's that's everyone's focus is on that, I suppose. What have you made of Steve Clarke as Scotland manager? Anyway, Steve.
To be honest, I'm impressed again. He's one of these Scottish blokes who has the most boring voice in the world, but
yeah,
he kens his football, and I think he's stuffed that team full of boys who are sort of clever players. That's why I think we'll win tonight, because I think the Faroese will be quite athletic, but you've got boys like McGinn and Christie, Tierney as well, who are in there, and I think they're good, proper football players who will be able to hopefully play around these guys a bit and I think this sort of opponent suits the current Scotland team.
Tanner Bar players, as you would call them in Dundee.
Exactly. Land a bar and a sixpence.
There we go. Happy days. Right. Okay, we'll leave it there. Good luck to Scotland, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice, or go to thetilly.co.uk to find out how you can get the paper delivered right to your door.